Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann this week. She's on vacation. This weekend, President Donald Trump came to Ohio to campaign for Republican State Senator Troy Balderson in the race for Ohio's 12th congressional district. The president endorsed Balderson as a fighting man for Ohio.
So we have a man that's going to fight for you. He's going to fight for Ohio, and he's going to be here for a long time. He will never, ever disappoint you. I found that out from the people that know him. He's just not going to disappoint you. He's really smart, and he's a really hard worker.
The vacant seat is considered a toss-up one day away from the special election. It's also considered an indicator for how Republicans will fare in the upcoming midterm elections. It's our weekly reporter roundtable, and joining us now to talk about that and more is Cincinnati Inquirer state government reporter Jesse Balmert. Welcome, Jesse.
Thanks for having me.
Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter Andy Chow. Andy, thanks for being here again.
Good morning.
And Columbus Dispatch reporter Kathy Kandisky. Kathy, thanks for being here.
Good morning.
All of you, it's like the big event that happened on Saturday up in Powell. They were closing roads. It was a really big thing. President Trump's in town. It was Saturday night. He endorsed Troy Balderson. Jesse, you said you were at the rally. I don't know if any others of you attended. So fill us in, Jesse, on what you saw, what you heard.
So it was a very well-attended rally. There were people coming from different parts of the state and even surrounding states. I know people waited in line for several hours to get in. The actual gymnasium at Olentangy Orange High School was very hot that night. People were close to passing out if some of them did not already. So it was a very packed house, and he spoke a lot about Troy Balderson, but also a lot about just generally topics that you would expect the president to touch on, from the wall to, you know, concerns about press bias to tax reform to various other topics. Essentially, like any stump speech that you've heard the president give recently, he hit on those issues on Saturday.
Playing to his base.
Certainly, certainly. There were a few chants of build the wall from the people in the crowd. Also, Congressman Jim Jordan was present with the president.
What do you know?
Oh, gosh.
What did I miss?
It's a Monday morning, guys. Drink some more coffee. So anyway, Jim Jordan was there, and he was getting a lot of support from the crowd. They were screaming Jordan and Speaker of the House. He, of course, is considering a bid for the Speaker of the House, has said that he's going to do that. There's also a bit of a cloud surrounding him because there are some questions about whether he knew about allegations of sexual misconduct at Ohio State on the wrestling team while he was an assistant coach there. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like the crowd there was not concerned about those allegations. Instead, we're just offering a full-hearted endorsement of Mr. Jordan.
Mm-hmm. Do we know if Troy Balderson invited the president or if the president said, I'm coming? Do we know if the Republican Party did the inviting? Do we know any of this?
Well, according to Governor Kasich, he says Balderson told him he did not invite the president. When Balderson was asked directly about this, Balderson just said he was delighted to have the president there, made a lot of flattering comments about the president, but didn't really answer the question as to whether he invited the president or not. So I don't think we really know. Make no doubt, the president was there to fire up the base, and that's what Troy Balderson needs if he's going to win. You know, he needs to make sure the Republicans turn out. It's a Republican-leaning district. He should win the race, but Democrats are showing a lot of signs of enthusiasm in this one. And so it could be close. And the last thing the Republicans want to do is lose it. But the idea of Balderson kind of right now being in an argument between Kasich and Trump is the timing, I'm sure, is not appreciated.
Yeah, I think it's a lose-lose situation for Balderson. So let's say if for some reason he did not want to attach himself to President Trump and the White House says – or not the White House, but the Republican Party says, well, Trump's coming down to support you. He can't say no to something like that, especially when he is trying to fight for those further right conservatives in Muskingum County, Delaware County. So he can't say no to it. And I wonder if it's helpful for Balderson to have somebody like Kasich on the other end sort of, mucking up the water and saying, well, he didn't want him there to begin with. So then it sort of gives Balderson
both,
like,
you know, he can
maybe have it both ways. Like you said, he's kind of caught in the middle. So I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing because he is trying to also get the Kasich voters. He has an ad out with John Kasich's face on it saying, I endorse Troy Balderson. That is Yeah, you're right.
It is Monday.
What am I going to say?
You just wait, Kathy.
And so, I think, I mean, it's just such a weird election to begin with.
It's weird.
We have Ohio Republicans who are diehard Trump supporters, more traditional conservatives who fall more in line with Kasich. So Balderson's trying to get both of those voters.
And it'll be interesting because a lot of people view this as a referendum on the president. So if the president comes and tries to rally up the troops and Balderson were to lose, I think that's going to be very telling to the Republicans. All eyes are kind of on suburban voters, suburban Republican voters, suburban and independent voters who went with Trump last time to see if they're sticking with Trump.
Well, I had read something over the weekend that the president's visit in support of Balderson turned off Republican women in the suburbs. I don't know if any of you read anything like that, but I thought that was an interesting thing, just that they were targeting the women who – or rather the women were targeting whether or not the Trump influence was there with their vote.
And that's been kind of sort of the statistical research lately is how much of an effect does Trump play on Republican women who, you know, usually – you know, if you're a Republican, whether you're a man or a woman, you usually stick Republican. But there has been this swing lately, not necessarily that women who identify as Republicans will come out and vote for a Democrat. They just won't come out at all. And Balderson needs a big turnout in these more red areas of his district in order to win.
Delaware and Licking County in particular, the more populated areas of the Republican stronghold in that district. Danny O'Connor is expected to win Franklin County. He's from here. There's more Democrats here. There's going to be a big turnout. There's a lot of voters in Franklin County. So it's really dependent on what Balderson's able to do in Delaware, Licking County primarily. And suburban women voters are going to be key to that. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting. But, you know, have no doubt, this is a Republican-leaning district. This should go Republican. Trump won this district by 11 points. So if the Democrats win, that'll be a real feather in their cap.
But aren't polls showing it's a toss-up at this point, the day
yes.
before the election?
So it's true. The fact that this is potentially close at all is fascinating because registered Republicans outnumber Democrats something like 2-1. It is a district that has been held by a Republican for decades, Pat Tiberi most recently, but before that, John Kasich in various iterations of this. It has been redrawn. And also, it's a district that went for President Donald Trump by 11 percentage points, which was more than the state average was. So this should not be a competitive seat. And the fact that it is speaks to organization and enthusiasm of the Democrats. It speaks to concerns about the president or direction of the country, or, you know, perhaps speaks about Troy Balderson and the campaign he's run. But it also speaks to August being a weird time to vote,
right.
And it's going to be a weird electorate.
People are on vacation.
Kids are ready to go back to school.
It's not a time people are used to voting, and so that will make it hard to predict who's going to be at the polls tomorrow.
And the other thing I find kind of interesting about this, neither of these candidates is flawed in any strong way. I mean, there's nothing weird about this race in terms of who's running or who should have an advantage.
Different than a couple other ones.
Which
that
is different than a couple others we've seen
around the country
where people have had weird charges against them or whatever. These two are pretty. I hate to call them flawless because someone will call and tell us something. But generally speaking, there's no scandal with either of these candidates. They're both pretty clean candidates. So it'll be really interesting to see how this one turns out.
You're right. They both have a record of being public servants. They've served their respected office as well, and there's no scandal around it. That's a really good point.
They both featured their moms in their commercials.
When you bring mom out, you know, who can resist? It's
they're
like
nice,
puppies and babies,
nice
you know, then you bring mom. This race, though, speaking to what you mentioned, Kathy, hasn't brought the kind of attention because of the fact that there hasn't been any scandal associated with either of these candidates. But now all of a sudden it seems to be garnering interest. So what is the interest? The fact that it's so close and it's supposed to be a Republican district, or just people watching what's going to happen in November?
I think that's it. I think it's a prelude to the November midterm elections.
It's the last special election in the nation for Congress before the November elections. And so it's one people are watching. It's interesting because really what we're voting on tomorrow is on about 4 or 5 months of a term, because we're filling out the remainder of Pat Tiberi's term. And then these two folks are going to turn around and go at it again in November. So it's a weird election. election. I think that's one reason why there had been less attention and had been less money spent on this race initially, because it was for such a short period of time. But I think when people realized this is really the last opportunity to either say, here's a blue wave, or crush the blue wave before November, it's gotten an outsized amount of attention for what it is.
And Ohio, Ohio's really not a swing state anymore, I don't feel. I think we're really more lean Republican in Ohio. So if the Democrat wins here, I think it really says a lot for some of these races in what are, I think, much more competitive states than Ohio's become for the midterm elections.
Right. But, well, and because the districts have been drawn to favor Republicans, and this is a very heavily favored Republican district. So, you, like Kathy said, if even if O'Connor loses by 1 or 2 points, that could send a huge signal out nationwide to say, look how close he was in such a heavily favored Republican district. And then that could lead to more money, more advertising, more yard signs. And that could also lead to people who don't usually donate to Democrats who believe in this so-called blue wave to show up and show even more support financially.
Speaking of finances, these candidates now have to turn around and do this all again and raise money. And so how much are their parties going to be contributing to their campaigns? Because who can do that?
I think it really depends how close it is. I mean, if it's close, if Danny O'Connor wins, he'll get all kinds of money. If he's within a point or two or three or four even, I think he's going to have a lot of attention and get a lot of money. They'll find the money. They'll pick the races.
Mm-hmm. But I also, to your point, in November, this race is not going to be out on its own. There are going to be other races in Ohio that are perhaps even more competitive than the 12th district. For example, down in Cincinnati, there's an interesting race between Steve Chabot and Aftab Perival, the clerk of court down there. And that is perhaps a tighter district as far as like Republicans to Democrats go. So, and of course, we'll have the governor's race and all of these other things to pay attention to. So I think it will get a little more buried in November than it is now, like off on its own in August.
True.
Sherrod Brown would also be on the ballot, who also tends to pull out Democrats or people who vote Democratic who don't always come out every year. So, yeah, there's a lot of other circumstances around the November ballot.
And we spoke of the map, the geographical map of this district, and I looked at it, and it is one of the weirdest gerrymandered maps of it, with these little fingers poking up into some – just for a little bit in some counties and whatever. What is that going to tell us then? I mean, are some of these really influential Republican high-income districts really going to matter a lot?
I think so. I think it really comes down to Delaware and Licking County, which I believe – the district includes all of Delaware County. Is it all of Licking County as well?
I think so. Parts,
fingers up in Marion.
Parts of Richland County, Morrow County, and what's Zanesville's county?
Muskingum.
Muskingum, parts of that county too. I really think the key for the Republicans is Delaware and Licking County, because those are the most populated counties outside of Franklin and the most heavily Republican counties.
And I believe I'm going off of Jeremy Peltzer, reporter with Cleveland.com, has been following this race a lot. And I believe he said that 33% of the district are voters from Franklin County. And I think that's the biggest amount. That's the biggest percentage of the whole district. So the playbook there is for Danny O'Connor to run up the score in Franklin County and get hopefully all 33% of those people to vote for him to even have a shot. And he's going to lose Delaware County. He's likely going to lose Delaware County, likely going to lose Licking County, but by how much? And so, to Kathy's point, that's where Balderson needs to get a huge turnout.
We are going to take a quick break. Listeners, love to hear from you. You can join the conversation. Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be back in a moment with more on our Reporters Roundtable. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann this week. This weekend, President Donald Trump came to Ohio to campaign for Republican State Senator Troy Balderson in the race for Ohio's 12th congressional district. The vacant seat is considered a toss-up one day away from the special election. President Trump said voters must get out and vote for Balderson tomorrow.
We must elect Troy Balderson. We have to elect Troy. So get your friends, get your neighbors, get your family, and get out and vote for Troy on Tuesday.
Whoever wins tomorrow would be favored in the midterm election in November to fill the seat for the next 2 years. We're talking about that and more today on our weekly reporter roundtable. And still with us, Cincinnati Inquirer state government reporter Jesse Ballmert, Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter Andy Chow, and Columbus Dispatch reporter Kathy Kandisky. Welcome and thank you all for still being here with me. Mm-hmm. More to discuss on this. We were talking about some of the ads that have been playing for longer than I think we all needed to see those ads. But back to that, Kathy, you had an impression of the first Danny O'Connor ad that you said kind of set the stage for some things.
I thought Danny O'Connor came out really strong with his first ad, where he spoke about his willingness to work with both sides of the aisle, his willingness to work with Trump, his willingness to work with Democratic leaders. I thought that was strong. I thought that was a great way for him to come out of the gate and would appeal. And obviously, the message he was sending was an attempt to appeal to voters on both sides of the aisle. I thought it was strong. I thought it was good. And I think he's had a good strategy since. But he's going to need an excellent strategy because this is a tough race for him to win.
Mm-hmm. And it's really true. Do both of you think that whoever wins tomorrow really does have the upper hand then for that special the regular election in November?
I don't know about an upper hand. I think if Balderson were to win tomorrow, he would likely win in November. If O'Connor were to win tomorrow, I still think there's a good shot Balderson could win in November. But O'Connor would get a huge amount of money, huge amount of momentum going into it. So that would be the difference made in tomorrow's election.
Kind of gets back to the question of who's paying attention.
And who's going to get out? I mean, this is different here than in November when traditionally women, men, everybody know that's the time to vote.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just the way this district is and the population involved in it, I mean, it's still the most likely scenario tomorrow is that Troy Balderson wins this district just because he is the Republican, and that is who generally votes here. There's been a lot of promising signs for Democrats as far as early voting numbers go, but also Republicans typically tend to vote on Election Day, which is tomorrow.
The Republicans are working really, really hard in Franklin County. You've seen them. They've been up and down the streets. They're knocking on doors. They're trying to get people out to vote. Their get-out-the-vote effort has been very, very strong, so it'll be interesting to see what those numbers in Franklin County actually are. And what I'm talking about are the number of people that do actually go out to vote, so we can see how effective that effort was for them.
Well, we
talked about how energized are the Democrats.
Men and women voting. What about the youth vote in this?
Well, there was a Does that mean none? Well, there's actually, I forget who just did the study. I mean, we talk about this every time there's an election about how, you know, if young people, and by young people, I think it's 18 to 30, were to actually show up and vote, they represent a huge portion of the voting block. They just don't show up to vote. And then the young voters say, well, we would show up to vote if we had somebody who represented our ideals, our issues, and if we had somebody who was in our age group. Now, for this time around, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe O'Connor's 31.
Yeah, he's young.
He's a Democrat, which represents a large portion of the young voters as well. And so it will be interesting to see how many young voters actually turn up, because this is sort of, all right, put your money where your mouth is. You say that you would show up if you had somebody who represents this, that, and the other. So it'll be interesting to see how many young voters show up. But again, those are people who don't even turn out on Election Day. Will they show up for a special election?
Well, I can give some insight on that. I have a young voter in my house, and she just got home from summer session at college, and she was one of these young voters who like really studied the gubernatorial candidates before she voted. First thing she said to me when she saw all the stuff on our front porch, she said, "Is there an election?"
Oh,
they didn't know.
And when was that?
That was like 2 days ago.
Yeah, I just had a you know, yesterday at church, a pastor came up to me and was like, and said, "Is there an election going on Tuesday? Tell me all about
it." We may live in a bubble.
You missed the commercials, though. But the ads are so prolific.
But you know
prolific.
What?
Well, a lot of young people don't watch television.
That's true.
And
that's true.
I don't know if they're on Netflix.
Oh, it's on Hulu all the time.
Is it on Hulu?
Yes. Every single ad on Hulu is
all right.
This.
Well, that excuse is gone.
But, I mean, like you said, I mean, for in this case of the person who asked me yesterday, he's been in and out of the state on vacation and doing other trips and stuff. And I think a lot of people have been like that, too. Mm-hmm. They've, you know, you check out in the summer and you're doing other things and you're going on vacation with your family and you're doing summer camps. And so this election seems to have snuck up on people.
I think so. I think it has.
And I also think maybe people don't know which congressional district they live in. I have a friend who works with the Board of Elections, and they've had people call from Hilliard asking if they're in this district, and no, they're in, you know, Stivers or in Joyce Beatty's district if they're out on the east side. So the way Franklin County is drawn, you may or may not be voting in this mm-hmm. election, even if you've been seeing the barrage of
correct.
Ads.
Right. Right.
Yeah, you don't even realize that, oh, that's my district.
Or you may be one of those people who say you're voting for Danny O'Connor or voting for Balderson, but you're really not voting for anybody. Right?
Right, yeah.
We're going to take a call. Alan from Columbus, you're on the air. Your question or comment, please.
Yeah, I got a flyer from Balderson says, if you don't vote for Danny O'Connor wins, what will you tell your neighbors? Remember, voting is public record. Do people know who I voted for? Is that public record?
No.
And that is a great question. Thank you.
Go
for it. Well, I mean, we've seen those pamphlets and brochures going around. No, people don't know who you vote for. They can find out which ballot you pulled in the primary, so they can find out if you voted on a Republican ballot or a Democratic ballot. But people don't know who you voted for.
And who's really going to do that? That was my other thing. It takes a lot of effort, I suppose.
Well, I think it was being circulated in Powell and in Delaware where, I mean, this district, especially in that county, they take this district very, very seriously. And I think the idea is if O'Connor, the Democrat, if he were to win, then there's sort of a scare tactic going on with that brochure saying, then if you didn't vote or you didn't turn out to vote, your neighbors are going to blame you. They're
but to be very clear, public record allows you to see if a person voted, but not who a person voted for. So mm-hmm. your neighbors would be able to find out if you voted in the election, but not who you voted for.
And it's a terrible scare tactic.
It is a terrible scare tactic.
There's truth in advertising, so can anything be done about the fact that it's false?
They can file an election complaint, and sometime after the election, they'll rule on it. So no, not really.
And then there was a Supreme Court ruling that there was also a Supreme Court ruling that found that the Ohio Elections Commission, you know, doesn't really have that much authority to say if something's false or not anyway. And
so is this more of, what do they say, ask permission or, you know,
right.
What's the saying?
Let them tell you no
ask
later.
For forgiveness, yeah. not for permission.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jesse.
I think we've definitely found that in Ohio election commissions. Frequently they're done months, if not years mm-hmm. later. And
wow.
It's usually just a slap on the wrist. So people in campaigns know that, and they're willing to put out advertisements that they know they probably won't be reprimanded for. And if they are, it'll be months later, and it won't matter because the election will be over.
And I'm not completely sure, but I feel like we should mention this. I'm not completely sure that Balderson – I don't know if that brochure is from Balderson's campaign.
Yeah, it could have been from somebody
super PAC or
–
uh-huh.
What about what Daryl Rowland of the Columbus Dispatch wrote last month, that local Democrats are showing early voting interest? And mm-hmm. I think we've already seen that there have been many Democrats that have gone early to vote. So what does this do? How does that factor into this election?
If a Democrat were to win, the Democrats need to have a big turnout in special elections because those are the ones who don't usually – I'm sorry, not special election, early voting.
Okay.
Because Democrats are usually the ones who don't have a huge turnout on actual election day. So they need to pump up the numbers beforehand in order to have a chance at winning. So you usually see that trend of Democrats you tend to vote early and then Republicans tend to vote the day of. We saw in the numbers for early voting during the gubernatorial primary that there is a – much larger turnout of Democrats voting in the primary. But when after Election Day happened, there was actually a bigger turnout all around, including the early voting and Election Day voting, that more Republicans came out to vote than Democrats at the end of the day.
And it's worth noting, especially with the caller's concern, that just because a person who is a registered Democrat goes in and votes does not mean they're voting for Danny O'Connor and vice versa. So these are a good indication of the way the voting might be going, but it's not a perfect test.
What about some of these, I want to say, forgotten candidates? Joe Manchin, the Green Party nominee, and another O'Connor, Matthew Brendan O'Connor, is on the ballot as a Libertarian. Are we hearing anything? Are they creating any interest?
No.
And not a lot of – well,
thank you, Kathy.
The Libertarians just had a big event this past weekend announcing their full slate of candidates on the ballot statewide and then going down to the districts. I believe do you say Matthew Brendan O'Connor is the Libertarian candidate?
Correct.
I don't believe he's on this special election ballot.
No, I think he's on the November ballot.
He's on the November ballot. Joe Manchin is –
That's my understanding.
But I know that the Libertarian candidate is not. So I think that's another reason why you're not hearing as much from everybody, because O'Connor and Balderson are the ones who were on the ballot first, and I believe they might be the only ones on this special election ballot. We might hear more about the minor party candidates moving into November.
It's going to be hard for them to break through all the noise. You know, they're not going to have funds to go on the air, go on television like the other candidates. It's going to be difficult, as it usually is for these guys.
Right.
Worth noting, though, Joe Manchin did show up to Vice President Mike Pence's rally for Troy Balderson on Monday and was out in the lobby talking to folks and, you know, spoke with Jeremy Pelzer from Cleveland about how, you know, he gets along great with Republicans. So it is a person who could maybe steal a couple percentage points. And if it is a really close race, that could have an effect. But that's just like so many ifs.
Yeah, Manchin has been hustling. He went to a couple of different – he went to that one debate in New Albany and was able to talk with – the attendees of that debate between Balderson and O'Connor, and while he didn't participate in the debate, he was able to talk to people afterwards. So he's been going around to these events.
But it always is a long and rough road for these candidates that aren't backed by major parties. We're going to take a call here. This is Margaret from Columbus. Margaret, your question or comment, please.
Yes, I just want to comment on the potential effect of Trump's visit to the Columbus area, raising the awareness among the Democratic base, particularly the younger ones. I know my 28-year-old daughter was aware of it, and I had my usual sit-down. Remember, there's a vote on Tuesday that's very important, and she's, I know, and she realizes that this one in November is very important, and she's one who her vote was in 2008, but she missed the 2010 because she was too busy with her life and all, and doesn't usually do the midterms. But she's very aware that this election is important, and that, you know, I don't think she would have been aware necessarily, except for all the calls she says she's gotten, a bunch of texts reminding her about it, and that, you know, Trump kind of put that in her mind.
Wow.
Tuesday's on her schedule.
Yeah.
Interesting. Thank you,
so
Margaret.
So sort of the reverse effect than what maybe the Republicans had wanted. When Donald Trump comes to town, everybody knows about it, and it raises awareness for everybody. So it sounds like what Margaret's saying, even people who would tend to vote Democratic now –
it's on their radar.
It's on their radar because of the president's
visit. Think Donald Trump fires everyone up, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, whether
negatively
it's
or positively.
Positively or
saying?
Negatively. Mm-hmm. He certainly, you know, brings out the enthusiasm in people. And so perhaps that, you know, I'm not sure which side of the scale that's going to have a bigger effect on tomorrow, but certainly drew more attention to the race.
We have another call. Bill, you're on the air. Bill from Columbus. Your question or comment, please.
Well, I know the panel just talked about that letter that was circulating among Republicans telling them that, people can find out whether or not you voted, and wouldn't you be embarrassed if your neighbors knew you didn't vote? I just wanted to point out that there's a very similar letter circulating that's being pushed by the Democratic side, and I want to quote from this document. It says, who you vote for is a secret, but whether or not you vote is public record. This year, we're sending you and your neighbors these records to help you keep track of your participation.
Whoa.
Wow. So they're doing the research for them. Where did you get – I'm just curious, Bill. Was this in the mail? Was it dropped at your doorstep?
Through the mail.
Okay.
Let me just continue to quote, though. We all know democracy works best when everyone votes, including you. How would your friends, family, and neighbors feel if they saw your voting record and knew you were an infrequent voter? Now, this comes from a group that's called Progressive Turnout Project, and I'm pretty sure we Googled that up and found it was a left-leaning PAC or whatever you want to call it, activist group. So it looks to me like both sides are doing almost identical things here on that front.
Nasty. That's nasty.
Bill, thank you. When did this start? When was this a thing that let's talk about people's voting records? I'd never
it's
heard
like
of
shame
it.
Voting. They're shaming people to
I'd
vote.
I'd never heard of that until this election.
Mm-hmm.
A new tactic.
I mean, I'll just speak anecdotally, but it feels like ever since 2016, ever since Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump ran against each other, there's been this big rhetoric around who did you vote for? Like who did you vote for? Where do you stand on these issues? Because, of course, we all know that we're living in a very polarized climate right now. And so there's this idea of, well, did you go out and vote? Well, did you go out and vote? If you're going to complain about this, you need to tell me. And there's just this divide and this anger about, did you go to vote and who did you vote for? And it seems like it's culminating in these pamphlets that are being passed out and shaming people and sort of like shining the spotlight on voters.
Yeah, it's just nasty.
Yeah.
Nasty.
Well, maybe we've hit a new low with this.
I doubt we've hit a new low. There'll be a newer low.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. We're with Jesse Balmer, Andy Chow, and Kathy Kandiski. It's the Reporters Roundtable. You can join the conversation, too. Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. And you are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann this week. Last week, former President Barack Obama endorsed the Democratic ticket of Richard Cordray and Betty Sutton for governor and lieutenant governor of Ohio. While the former president's endorsement comes as no surprise, President Donald Trump has yet to weigh in on the race for Ohio governor with any endorsement of Republican candidate Mike DeWine. We're talking about that and more today on our weekly Reporter Roundtable. And still with us, Cincinnati Inquirer State Government reporter Jesse Balmert, Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter Andy Chow, and Columbus Dispatch reporter Kathy Kandiski. Thank you for sticking with us. And let's talk about that. President Barack Obama endorsed Richard Cordray. What kind of endorsement impact will this have on voting? Any? I mean, it isn't a surprise, I suppose.
So I guess, I mean, it would have had a bigger impact if he didn't endorse him. But right now, I guess, I think having Barack Obama's endorsement does not hurt Cordray. I think I don't think Cordray would pass up the opportunity for Obama to come in and campaign with him. I don't think it hurts him in any way. I do think that Cordray isn't really adamant on going too far to the left. And, you know, during the primary, he took endorsements from Elizabeth Warren. But I think somebody like President Obama, Vice President Joe Biden, those types of people might be a little more helpful for him in the general election.
Well, Cordray headed the Consumer Protection Bureau under President Obama. So if he did not get President Obama's endorsement,
that would have been a slap in the face.
That would have been a slap in the face. So he whether or not it helps or not, I mean, he needed the endorsement.
Mm-hmm. And his running mate, Betty Sutton, is also a former Obama appointee, too. So on both fronts, this was an endorsement they were likely going to get, and then they got it. So it is good for them, but it's also not going to, like, pivot the narrative of the race based on this endorsement. Also worth noting, like from your intro, Mike DeWine was at Donald Trump's rally supporting Troy Balderson this weekend, and the president was giving a number of shout outs, including to Mike DeWine, who he said, you know, was a great person and needed their support. So on the fine line of whether that's an endorsement or not, I think you can safely say that Donald Trump is going to support Mike DeWine, whether that is a multiple tweet endorsement or coming here to campaign for him. I'm not sure what that looks like, but the Republican president will be behind the Republican governor candidate.
Andy, you mentioned you wouldn't be surprised maybe if former President Barack Obama came to rally for Cordray. Does he does Biden, do they still a lot help these candidates out even though they're out of office?
Yeah, I think so. I
mean, Biden's really popular.
Yeah, Biden's been making the rounds a little bit lately. I think I would argue that this is the biggest election that this is the biggest election since the two of them left office. So it remains to be seen how big of campaigners they are. But we'll see that soon, I guess.
I also think Biden is making his trips around the nation for potentially exploring a 2020 bid. And Ohio is a good place to do that as well. So I think there are dual purposes for him being in the great Buckeye state.
Has Kasich endorsed DeWine?
So I was actually at a press conference with the governor this past week and asked him about this. And he said that he was going to support DeWine. He had had a conversation with DeWine about Medicaid expansion and felt that Mike DeWine's response to that was adequate enough for him. Obviously, there is some concern that people have said about him flip-flopping on that issue. So he intends to support him, but basically said that if you do anything in August, does it even really count? Is anyone ever really paying attention? So I wouldn't be surprised if you see like an ad or a campaign stop later, but I don't think you're going to see it until at least after Labor Day.
Yeah. And I mean, remember, with everything that happens in the White House, things can turn on a dime as far as who you want support from. And I believe, because I think I was at an event with Jesse when we were talking to the governor about this before, and he said, I support Mike DeWine. I'm a, like, you know, he's a big fan of Mike DeWine. And so I basically, Kasich was saying, whatever I can do to help DeWine, I'll do. If that means campaigning for him, I'll campaign. But if I need to back off, I'll do that too. So basically he's saying, if it's going to hurt DeWine for Kasich to go around the state, he's not going to do it. But if DeWine wants him, he's there for him. And again, we still have, you know, a few months before November, and we don't know who the state, who voters are going to favor when if it comes down to, are you more of a Trump person or a Kasich person? We don't know where people are going to fall.
And John Kasich is an interesting person in Ohio politics right now because he has more support among Democrats than he does among Republicans who, you know, say he's doing a good job. And so it really depends on which voters Mike DeWine is appealing to at the moment, whether he wants to play the Kasich card or not.
And fundraising, how are they all doing, both?
So there was a fundraising deadline on Friday, and this is from, it's the July report, so a couple months. Rich Cordray and Buddy Sutton, they raised about $2.7 million. Mike DeWine, John Husted raised $2.37 million. So a similar amount. Rich Cordray and Buddy Sutton raised a little bit more. But the Republicans have significantly more on hand. They have closer to $9.6 million compared to like $5 million for the Democrats. So there's just a bigger war chest on the Republican side. And I think you would see that up and down these statewide races. Democrats were fundraising very well, but Republicans typically had more money on hand. And so that will be interesting as they go about paying for ads. Rich Cordray and Betty Sennin dropped their first campaign ad, so they're starting to spend a little money on the race. It was largely about previous jobs he has had, from McDonald's to head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And this is the Democrats trying to reintroduce Rich Cordray to the voters because he really hasn't been on the ballot or a visible person in Ohio politics for several years now. And so that's the kind of ad you would expect to run right now. But he's going to need money to do that. And right now he's at a 2-to-1 disadvantage on cash on hand to the Republicans.
I have no doubt. I mean, the Democratic interest will pump money into this race. It's seen, it's viewed as widely competitive. They want to pick up the governor's seat. I think he'll be, I think he'll see, you know, the funding he needs from special interest parties on this one.
Let's change the topic. Governor Kasich is cracking down on fentanyl drug offenses. He just signed a bill into law that makes harsher prison sentences for people distributing or possessing the synthetic opioid. What does he mean, harsher sentences?
So right now, if you were to be trafficking, if you were a dealer of fentanyl, you were caught, you would get a smaller prison sentence than if you were dealing heroin. But fentanyl is up to 50 times stronger, deadlier than heroin. And so this is just sort of fixing code to make sure that the punishment meets the crime, especially because we've seen that fentanyl is the most deadly drug right now in the state. More people are dying of fentanyl overdoses than any other overdose right now. So it's just sort of trying to stiffen up the penalties on that. You'll hear some opponents, not necessarily people who are against, sentencing for dealers, but there is this sentiment out there that the Ohio legislature is passing too many laws that put people in prison and not passing enough laws to bypass prison to go to treatment to actually fix the substance abuse problem. And opponents say that the legislature just keeps criminalizing drug use.
Isn't that what we have issue one coming up in November about? Am I right about that? Mm-hmm. Issue one would change lower level drug offenses to misdemeanors and would keep people out of prison and into addiction treatment. And Kasich is signaling his support for this. So he's at least it appears that he understands what you're talking about, Andy, trying to keep the more harsher sentences to the more harsher crime.
Mm-hmm.
Kasich totally understands that this was a big part of the reason he went for Medicaid expansion was because Medicaid expansion provided health insurance to cover drug treatment to a lot of low-income addicts. So that I think the governor – I mean, this is the biggest problem facing the state right now. This is – drug deaths, as Andy said, are increasing, continue to increase. Fentanyl is a much more common cause of drug deaths now. I think the governor gets this – I just think he really gets it. I think he's been working trying to combat the problem since day one.
And we have a problem in Ohio.
Huge.
Compared to even other states in the nation. And it's not just rural. It seems to be everywhere.
And the challenge of fentanyl is it's frequently laced with other drugs. So you think that you're buying like a certain street drug and then, oh, there's fentanyl in it and it's so much more powerful. There's a number of statistics about it, but it has been a huge problem statewide, specifically in Hamilton County. It's been a massive problem. Something close to 90% of all drugs analyzed by the Hamilton County Crime Lab included fentanyl in it. Mm-hmm. So it's not a small problem in Ohio. And I think the balance has always been trying to penalize these people who are distributing fentanyl while getting treatment for those who might be users of fentanyl. And this legislation, they're trying to crack down on these drug dealers, whom Kasich called merchants of death. But there is some concern that this will lead to higher penalties for drug users as well. And so that's the balance this legislation is trying to strike. It's also the balance that issue one is trying to strike. And it's a hard line to walk.
There's a lot more recognition now that drug addiction is a disease, not a crime. Mm-hmm. So if people are users, not dealers, as Jesse pointed out, but users need help, not jail, is kind of the mantra behind this.
There's also I think it's always worth pointing out that it's not necessarily that somebody's trying to get fentanyl. Somebody might be trying to get heroin. Somebody might be trying to get cocaine. And it ends up being laced with fentanyl.
Right.
And so that's become the really scary thing, too. People think, I mean, these drugs are harsh on their own, but people think that they're using one drug and it turns out that they have this deadly drug where you can just use it just once. You can just have a little bit in it and
it's very addictive.
You're dead. So
the
other problem we have, so we have a drug problem, of course, here in Ohio, but a lot of people will tell you that we have a prison overpopulation problem. We have overcrowded prisons, and the state spends about $1.6 billion for its Department of Ohio Corrections and Rehabilitation. So with issue one that we were talking about, supporters of the issue say that it will help steer people towards treatment rather than prison, and then therefore saving money on the prison side of things.
So for those who would go to prison under the new fentanyl law, it's kind of balanced out then by folks who might have gone to prison previously now go into treatment.
Right.
So people arguing about well, where does DeWine stand on this? Fentanyl law issue one, do we know?
I know on issue one, he's inclined to not support it.
Right.
He's a former prosecutor. Prosecutors have concerns with this legislation. They feel like on many of these things, they feel like it would be better addressed in state law as opposed to a constitutional amendment. Mm-hmm. And that this
constitutional amendment. Okay. Mm-hmm,
and that this might take some authority away from judges to make that decision about whether this person needs treatment or not. Another part of issue one would be, you know, not sending people to prison for probation violations that were not related to violent mm-hmm. offenses. And so they feel like in some of these instances, you sentence somebody to probation, and if they make a mistake, then you have the stick of a potential prison sentence. And by taking away the stick and only having the carrot, you know, that becomes a problem. That's the argument of the other side. And I think that's where Mike DeWine is lining more up.
Mm-hmm. The Paul Pfeiffer is a former Ohio Supreme Court justice. He's come out against it. He says that if you take this power away from judges to say, I'm either going to send you to prison or I'm going to send you to treatment, then the person with a substance abuse disorder will say, well, I'll take treatment. But if you take the threat of prison away, then you lose all sorts of leverage. And as Pfeiffer says, that'll create a domino effect that'll have pretty chaotic consequences.
So we're seeing both on this issue. Do you think mm-hmm. the fact that it's a constitutional amendment is a big part of what is turning some people off about this?
Definitely. Yeah. That's a big opponents. That's a big problem for a lot of opponents of amendments, is that they don't want to put things in the Constitution.
That's more academic opposition to it. I don't think the average person thinks about mm-hmm. whether it's in the Constitution or in state law.
It's true. And worth noting that Rich Cordray has come out in support of issue one and feels like it would be something that would address, you know, treatment of individuals. So he is for it. Mike DeWine likely against it. John Kasich leaning towards for it. But he really said that he needs to take a deeper look at it, too.
But your point, Andy, about being a deterrent to having to hold jail, I think that's what happens a lot in the drug courts. I know we have a drug court here in mm-hmm. Franklin County where they give people a shot at treatment. And if they fail or if they continue to fail, I think they recognize a lot of addicts relapse. But if they continue to fail or not do what they're supposed to do in court, then the judge sends them to jail.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an option now that would be taken away?
Opponents say that this will hurt drug courts that have put in a lot of work to create the kind of system that Kathy's talking about. The opponents say that issue one will hurt that.
Where do we know if other Republicans in the state government line up on this as far as trying to fight and how to fight fentanyl and heroin addiction? I mean, this is only one point, but are there others that are lining up behind this too?
I think they all support expanded treatment. I think there's widespread recognition of the problem. What I'm not sure about is how they line up on issue one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the bill that was signed into law was sponsored by Frank LaRose, who's a Republican in the Senate, but he's running for Secretary of State. And so, you know, he obviously supports the bill that he sponsored, but he didn't really weigh in on issue one, as far as I recall.
Thank you all so much for being here this morning. It's been a pleasure to see you all again.
Yeah.
Jesse Ballmert, state government reporter for the Cincinnati Inquirer. Jesse, thank you.
Thanks.
Andy Chow, Ohio Public Radio State House reporter for the News Bureau. Andy, good to see you.
You too.
And Kathy Andiski, Columbus Dispatch reporter. Thank you all.
Thank you, Gail.
And this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. We will have hour two coming up. I'm your host for Ann, and this is 89.7 NPR News.